Well, waters on Mexico's northern periphery has always been neglected, and definitely one of the poorer, more impoverished cities in Mexico, for sure, if not the poorest. And I was down there like, this is the norm, and okay, and it was corrupt, and I could handle it because I was a heroin addict, and so nothing could surprise me. I got busted by some cops down there, and I had a whole pocket full of needles and heroin when I first got there. And they were getting ready to haul me into jail, and I reached into my sneaker and I pulled out about a handful of $100 bills, and I said, "How much do you need?" And they said, "Give us 500." I gave them 500 bucks. They gave me back my dope, and I walked away.
This is Arrivals, stories of migration, transformation, and change. The program that explores what we do when what we've done is a thing of the past. And today we bring you the story of a border junkie.
Okay, my name is Scott Komar from New York State. Grew up in Hartford, Connecticut. Lived for years in Hartford, working and surviving, paying, you know, working and paying my rent and just kind of getting by, I guess you could say. And of course, I built a career as a truck driver in Hartford. I was hungry. I used to wake up in the morning scared to death where I was going to get my rent money. And so I went to work, and I worked 80 hours a week, and I stayed out of trouble. And as I watched some of the kids I grew up with go to prison, I stayed away from all that. I just immersed myself in my work, and eventually I started traveling as a truck driver, because when you're a truck driver, it comes with the territory. You're going to travel, and that's what I wanted to do. Places like Baltimore, and then Chicago, and then the South, the Southeast United States, Florida, and then eventually California, and doing coast-to-coast runs. And, you know, by the time I was in my 20s, my mid-20s, I found out about El Paso and the rest of the country. I really loved the West. The traffic here wasn't as bad as the other big cities. And of course, being on the border and Mexico, and that was the fun part back in those years. And it was easy going down here. And I there wasn't as much violence down here. People weren't as aggressive as places like New York or Chicago or maybe L.A., I don't know. But El Paso, the people here were pretty laid back. My first times in Juarez, I felt like a kid in a candy store. I stayed down there for a week, and it was different. And all those years of working 20 hours a day as a truck driver, I was ready to just walk away from that anytime. It was just a progress. It was a life progress, right? It starts off subtle and slow. You start with cigarettes, beer, marijuana. And when I grew up in Hartford, then the next step would have been maybe coke. I hated coke. I never liked it. Addiction is a progressive deal where you kind of move up the ladder through different stages. One day I was back in town, and one of my friends who I used to live across the hall from in Hartford, we hooked up, and he said, "Hey, you know, I'm selling drugs now," and he was selling heroin, and I try some, you can sniff it. And I tried some, and I liked it. And But I didn't do it every day, and I didn't do it often. But after a few years, I would do it once in a while. And then one of my friends got out of jail, and I hooked up with him, and he said he was doing it. And then he, you know, it's the usual deal, and this is how it goes for most addicts who shot dope. Hey, you know, you're wasting your money, you know, sniffing it. Why don't you shoot it? And so then I started using needles, and I learned how to use needles, and I kind of then it kind of went like this. When you get hooked on heroin, you might do it for a day, and then you do it the next day, and then you do it the next day. And then after a while, when you go to stop doing it, you feel like you just came down with the flu. And for the people who are just getting into it, the symptoms will last maybe 2 or 3 days, and it's over. Spring of 99, I sold my truck and caught a Greyhound bus down here. I was thinking about going to L.A., and I got off the bus. I knew El Paso. I knew Juarez was going to be my destination. I rented a house in Juarez for like 6 months. I wasn't really working. I was just living off the money I had put away. I'd work odd jobs, though. And as a matter of fact, I did work a little bit because there was an escort service for a bar in Juarez, and I was a van driver for the escort service, bringing the customers to and from the truck stop. It was actually a lot of fun, and didn't pay that much, but it kind of kept me doing something. And back then, in those years, my life, it was all about just having fun and being out, and drugs were cheap and readily available. I could be in a new place, everything new and different and exciting, and still maintain my habit. And the people down here were pretty easygoing, and as long as I didn't steal from anybody, I wasn't going to run into any problems. After a while, I couldn't drive the van for them anymore because I would just disappear and take off, and they'd be like, "Where'd Scott go?" And I'd be out driving the back streets of Juarez, and so what ended up happening was I ran out of money, but I wound up on the streets. Juarez, El Paso is a poor people's community. You can survive with money, you can survive without money down here, if you know how. And of course, I became a professional panhandler, and I was doing that 7 days a week for a while, down by the bridge. I never flew a sign. I never stood on like an exit ramp holding a sign up. I would fill a duffel bag full of clothes, and I just walk up to people and tell them I was on my way somewhere, and I needed some money to get a room or this and that, a bus ticket, and I was pretty good at it. And I noticed that poor people are more generous than wealthy people. And poor Mexican people were definitely the most generous, and I really have to say I'm very grateful for those who were sympathetic to me during those years, because they kept me alive. I was making between 50 and 100 bucks a day, 7 days a week, and it kept me going. You know, one of the things that protected me was I stayed out of the worst areas, and I lived in an area where I everyone knew me. They knew me to the point they were giving me nicknames. I'd walk by to give me, "How you doing today?" I'd see them on a daily basis, and if I didn't have any money, they'd throw down some free food, that kind of stuff. Since I would tell everybody I was from New York, that was my nickname, Nueva York. Hey, Nueva York, right? New York. And that was my panhandle line. The first thing I'd say, "Hey, I'm from New York, and I'm trying to get a bus ticket or something." And so that's how I got the nickname, because I would always use that as a gimmick. You'll be down on the streets of Juarez, man, and you see these kids come up, and you know they're country kids from Mexico, and they got New York Yankees baseball caps on, and it's all just a big idea that they have. But it worked for me. That was my gimmick, right? And even now, if the old-time taxi drivers who are still working downtown by the bridge, they're still down there, if they recognize me, they'll be like, "Hey, Nueva York, ¿cómo está?" and all that, you know, and that at the same time, you got to remember, I was a heroin addict. So it wasn't just about finding a place to live and being poor. It was the fact that I was strung out and using drugs every day, and I needed money to feed my habit. By the time I was down here in Juarez, my addiction had progressed to the point where I wasn't just a weekend warrior anymore. It totally changed me. I couldn't feel, you know what I mean? I was out there hustling every day and looked at people as targets. I learned how to accept rejection, and I became very one-track minded. The whole experience changed me big time. I was living in motel rooms, renting rooms here and there, in and out of church homes, rehabs, homeless shelters, hotel rooms, flop houses. And you know, you pay your rent, people leave you alone. And you can do whatever you want. And you just wake up every day, and you're just out here. And pretty soon, your whole life is centered on that lifestyle. And until it just wears you right out, and you can't take it anymore. So when I came back to El Paso, it was like deciding to go cold turkey. It's easy to break the physical dependency, but the psychological dependency is harder in the beginning, because you go back and do it again because you know what it feels like and it feels good. Well, then it becomes progressive, because after a while, it's not just a 2 or 3 day chippy anymore. After a few weeks, then it, you know, or like say, yeah, the first few weeks you try and stop, you're going to feel bad for 2 or 3 days, and then you shake it off and go on, right? But then you keep doing that for a few years, and after a while, those 2 or 3 day little flu symptoms turn into, 2 weeks with no sleep, and you're puking your guts out, and you got to be in a hospital somewhere to get off it. And the longer you do it and the more you do it, the worse the withdrawal symptoms are. It was the 4th of July, and I remember I was dehydrated, and I passed out and fell out in a shower. I spent like 24 hours in an ICU unit, and that was it. I knew it was over. I knew I was going to die if I went back out. From 2003 to 2007, when I lived in Juarez, I was in recovery. And that's when I met my wife. That's when my son was born. That's when I started going to college. And that's when the real changes start to take place. And I was living over there, going to school over here, working over here. And I wasn't living in no $50 month of shabby room either. I was paying $180 a month for a 2-bedroom apartment downtown that I found, and it was a beautiful apartment because it was on the second floor and it was off the street. And I, you know, living in Juarez, like those hot summer nights, man, and you'd hear, I lived like about 3 or 4 buildings in from this big avenue, 16 de Septiembre, and it was crazy, man. You'd hear like in the middle of the night, the 16 de Septiembre was an avenue, 16th of September. It was like 6 lanes or whatever, 5 lanes, I forget now. And then it had a little sidewalk, and those cars would race down it like a highway, right? Well, at night, one car, you might get a drunk driver, he'd hit a telephone pole, you'd hear it. You could hear, it'd be dead silent at night, and then you'd hear, boom, and then the power in the whole neighborhood would go out. And just thinking to yourself, man, I'm sure glad I wasn't walking down the street when that happened. They would have mopped the floor, cleaned you up off the sidewalk. And those were beautiful times for me. I would wake up at 5 in the morning. I would walk and watch the sunrise. I took a lot of photos. Those morning sunrises crossing the bridge, all the people in the streets, downtown Juarez, downtown El Paso, I used to see them every morning. They recognized my face. I would buy coffee and burritos from the same people every day. You know, year in, year out, they knew me, you know, and that's a good feeling when you walk down the street and the people know you, right? Even the cops in Juarez remembered me from when I was strung out, and now they saw me in recovery, and they left me alone. And it was almost like if anybody bothered me, they'd go after them. I think I was so lost that the Mexican people probably looked at me and thought, this poor guy, man, he just doesn't have a clue. You know, that's probably why they didn't kill me or something. Not that they would have killed them, because when I was first down in Mexico, I made a few friends, and I made some friends. There was this old-time street gang in this neighborhood down there. It was called La Quinta, right? And all the guys had, like, retired from the thug life, you know, but they were still out there, and I was hanging around some. We would talk and tell stories and this and that, and one guy, he was probably a good friend of mine. His name was Marcos. And Marcos, he used to sneak across the river and work construction and sneak back. And that's the whole thing. A lot of Mexican people just come over here and work, bring the money back, and so they can live good over there. But Marcos told me one night when we were hanging out, and he said, you know what? When the Mexican people open up to you, you're going to be like family. And he was right, man, because once I got to know the people in the neighborhood and those neighborhoods I lived in, man, it was like I could go next door, they'd feed me. You know what I mean? And if I didn't have the rent money, all I had to do was walk up the street and say, I don't have the money for my rent this month. And people would give me money. I mean, you know, that's how I survived. I was a professional panhandler. I went down there, and I went to one of my favorite restaurants, and it was a restaurant, kind of street-level restaurant, and the owner was the same owner, and he remembered me. And I started asking him, well, what happened to so-and-so? What happened to, you know? And he told me, point blank, he said, you remember all those guys you used to hang around with? And we named off names, and he knew them, and I knew them. And every time I would remember a name that he knew, dead, right? All of them were killed. And you know, I thought about it. And one of my best friends, he died of a drug overdose right down on the river, on the Mexican side, right at the foot of the hill, just below UTEP, the university here. It's right on the border. And right down the hill from the university on the other side of the highway is the river. So this kid died of a drug overdose right there on the other side of the river, probably looking up at the university buildings, you know. I was lucky the way things came down. And anyone who survives active narcotics addiction is lucky to begin with.
Thanks to Scott Komar and Emma Jacobs for help with this story. You can learn more about Scott by reading his book, Border Junkie. Links to that and much more are available on our website, arrvls.com. Be sure to leave us a review on iTunes if you like the show. This episode was written and produced on the top of a hill surrounded by other hills in the lovely Montecito Heights neighborhood of Los Angeles, California, with help from our associate producer, Nora Lind. Episode art comes from Steph Tan. Arrivals is a proud and founding member of The Herd, a storytelling audio collective featuring independent producers from across North America. Listen to all their shows at theherdradio.com. That's H-E-A-R-D radio.com. I'm Jonathan Hirsch. Thank you for listening. And until we meet again, may you wind up where you need to be.